Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome all of you to this session on Eastern Exchange, France in the 18th Century East, though actually our panelists range further back and forward. It's my great pleasure to introduce first Julia Gossard. Julia is currently a postdoctoral fellow at the Institute for Historical Studies at UT Austin. She received her PhD, she ended it this summer, and her subject was Reforming Children, the Pedagogy, Commerce, and Politics of Childhood in the early modern French world. Her work has also been recognized by the Society for French Historical Studies with the Marjorie M. and Lancelot Barrar Memorial Award for the Best Dissertation in Progress. And she's also received the Robert Palmer Research Travel Award from the American Society for 18th Century Studies. So her work is already on a very progressive path. And she's speaking today on Jeunes de Langue, French Children in the Ottoman Empire.
Thank you, Kathleen. I'd first like to start by thanking The Western for having this panel and thank my fellow panelists for being here today and also for making us H. French movie stars with recording of this panel. At the same time that the 17th century French Empire had its eyes on the Western horizon, they equally held ambitions to expand in the manner of the Dutch and Portuguese eastward, across the Mediterranean to the Levant, India, and Southeast Asia. But Louis XIV and Jean-Baptiste Colbert had to rely on the cooperation and expertise of French merchants from Marseille, who already had the trade networks and relationships established with Eastern cultures and empires. In dealing specifically with the Ottoman Empire, the French crown had to follow the lead of the Marseille merchants, who employed codemans, or translators, as economic, political, and cultural ambassadors. In particular, the French crown adopted the Marseille practice of sending French children to the Ottoman Empire to learn Turkish, Arabic, Armenian, and other Levantine languages. Establishing a joint venture with the Marseille Chambre de Commerce, the French crown created l'École des Jeunes de Langue to educate and train French adolescent codemans. These youths acted as cultural, economic, and political ambassadors and brokers with the Ottoman Empire. Even though the purpose of this school was to create culturally sensitive and linguistically minded adolescents who could bridge the cultural and political barriers between the French and the Ottomans, the French crown, much like they did in North America, worried about the increasingly cultural hybridity adolescent programs exhibited. During the early modern period, Marseillais merchants built expansive trade networks in the Ottoman Empire that accounted for nearly 98% of all of France's imported luxury goods. Nicknamed La Porte de l'Orient, Marseille owed much of its success to the merchants' understanding and respect for the local language, customs, and beliefs in the Ottoman Empire. Essential to every Marseillais merchant was a translator. The most successful merchants employed at least 4 translators who spoke Turkish, Armenian, Greek, or Arabic. But even smaller, less lucrative merchants employed at least 2 translators, demonstrating their essential role in the process of trade. During the first years of exchange in the mid-16th century between Marseille merchants and the Ottoman Empire, most of these merchants hired men on site in Smyrna, Constantinople, Sidon, or Chios to act as translators. These men were highly educated, capable of speaking, reading, and writing Turkish, Armenian, Arabic, and Persian, as well as a variety of European languages. With such a vast linguistic knowledge, most of these men were at least 40 years old. Although some codemans acted as independent contractors of sorts, soliciting customers at major ports and markets, many codemans were related to the Ottoman merchants and received their customers through the insistence of the Ottomans themselves. As such, the Togman became an essential part of the trade network established between the French trader and their Ottoman counterpart. In the early years of trade, Togmans never came to France with the merchants. Instead, the Togmans remained in the East and acted as an intermediary of sorts between the French and Ottoman, translating documents they received from one or sent them to the French. When the French merchant came to the East, the Togman accompanied the French merchant, acting as a translator and cultural guide. Since many of these translators were related to the Ottoman merchants, the French worried that the translator negotiated not in the French merchants' favor, but in that of their own families. To remedy these concerns, by the 1630s, many Marseille merchants were sending their own teenage sons, associate sons, or godsons to Constantinople or Smyrna in order to learn the language and customs of the East. These French drogma would make sure to negotiate in France's favor and would ultimately be a better investment since these boys had more years of work ahead of them. The boys often lived with the Ottoman trading partner's family and received private tutors in Turkish, Arabic, or Greek, depending upon where the trader resided. Sending a child abroad to live with and learn from a foreign family demonstrated a commitment and investment in the future of the partner's trade relationship. To help Marseille merchants defray the costs associated with sending the boy to the Ottoman Empire, in 1645, the Chambre de Commerce began a fellowship program of sorts to fund the education of French drogmas in the Ottoman Empire. The Chambre de Commerce offered to pay half of the necessary fee, up to 500 livres per month, for the housing, clothing, feeding, and education of French boys in the Orient and the Levant. The edict suggested that eligible boys be between 14 and 18 years of age at deployment, unmarried, without issue, and sponsored by a solvent merchant. Additionally, the boys should demonstrate a curiosity for the Orient, but a strong loyalty to France. To the Marseille merchants, these boys' education was essential because it not only provided them with cheaper and longer-lasting translators, but it also made sure that their drogmans acted loyally towards French investments. Between 1645 and 1669, Marseille's Chambre de Commerce spent nearly 95,000 livres on 27 boys' education in the Ottoman Empire. Although four of these boys died en route to their voyage, and one defected once he got there, he married an Ottoman woman, the fellowship program was considered to be a success. In 1662, Louis XIV praised the Chambre de Commerce for, quote, advancing French's interest in the Ottoman Empire, suggesting that the program worked not only to the advantage of individual Marseille's traders, but also to the larger movement of the French eastward. But it was not until 1669 that the French state, at the guidance of France's finance minister and the architect of France's imperial efforts, Jean-Baptiste Colbert, transformed the program into a strategic tool of colonization. With the insistence of the French ambassador to the Ottoman Empire, Monsieur de La Haye, Colbert realized that if he wanted to build a large economic empire in the East on par with that of the Dutch, they needed to be able to establish comptoirs in the Ottoman Empire. The only way that they could hope to negotiate the opening of these comptoirs was through the use of drogma. Yet, just as the Marseille merchants had worried, Colbert was worried that the Ottoman drogmas were not trustworthy. In fact, de La Haye regularly expressed his concern about the loyalty of the Ottomans he employed in his own embassy. Instead of paying for Ottoman drogmas, whose loyalties to France were always questionable, according to the ambassador, in state fairs and negotiations, Colbert resolved to establish an institution that would create French drogma whose loyalties to France would never be questioned. With this goal in mind, in 1669, Louis XIV approved the Lettre Patin for an École des Jeunes de Langue that would train French children to be state interpreters of the, quote, languages of the Levant, including Turkish, Arabic, Persian, and Armenian. Originally, the school was only intended to train state interpreters, meaning that drogma's responsibilities would be to ambassadors, consuls, vice consuls, and other colonial administrators, but not to merchants. Colbert perceived French drogmas to fit into the larger military bureaucracy. For this reason, jeunes de langue were to be sons of the lesser nobility. However, Colbert underestimated the financial commitment required to establish and run such a program, a mistake that led him to seek the cooperation of the Marseille Chambre de Commerce. In order for the Chambre de Commerce to agree to fund a portion of the école, the school had to serve not only the state, but also merchant interests. In fact, the Chambre de Commerce stopped funding future French drogma unless they enrolled in the École des Jeunes de Langue. Despite Colbert's intentions, only 20% of the jeunes ended up being sons of the lower nobility. The rest of the boys were either merchant sons, godsons, or sons of their associates, mainly hailing from the upper middling and middling sorts in Marseille. Although every jeune de langue was responsible for his housing in Paris, other than an entry fee of 350 livres, the boys paid no tuition for their education. Their education was considered, according to the Lettre Patin, a royal service provided to loyal child subjects in the hopes of establishing the French presence in the Orient. From this statement, it is clear that the state employed the jeune as tools of colonization. Acceptance to l'école was based on several different factors. First of all, jeunes d'élan were all boys, underlining the gender nature of translators during the early modern period. Most jeunes were 13 years old when they entered the school, and 19 when they completed their education abroad. The minimum age requirement for a jeune was 12, presuming the child had successfully completed an education in French and Latin letters, and the maximum age for enrollment was set at 15. The age of 15 corresponds to a common age of apprenticeship, demonstrating again how this program in translation, interpretation, and cultural mediation was understood as a type of apprenticeship for state service. With two different student populations, the school developed two tracks of curriculum, the merchant track and the state track, so to speak. The Marseille Chambre de Commerce determined enrollment for boys who would act as merchant 12 months, maintaining their previous administration requirements. Boys who would serve as state 12 months were required to be from a noble family, show a deep commitment to Louis XIV and the French crown, and be well-versed in French and Latin. Regardless of whether the jeune took a merchant or state track, for the first 6 months, they were educated side by side in Paris. Originally located at the Sorbonne, l'école trained children in languages of the Levant and any other languages deemed appropriate for trade and negotiation for 6 months. During this time, they were introduced to the basics of the foreign language, which most normally was Turkish, and learned about the history of the Ottoman Empire. After having completed this rudimentary course, jeunes were separated by the tracks as merchant or state and transported to Constantinople or Smyrna, respectively. Because of the large French military battalion stations in Smyrna, only state drogmans were sent to that port. The merchant drogmans resided in Constantinople, where a large French Ottoman marketplace existed. The first 10 years of training these jeunes abroad was a social experiment. The children were required to write reports every month on their progress, noting how they fared in translating and learning about Ottoman culture. A select sample of these reports from the 1670s demonstrate how the jeunes' responses and reactions shaped the future of the program and the larger goals of colonization, affecting the direction of their education. Unsurprisingly, we have a lot of complaints from the children who were sent there. The most common complaint among the jeunes was a lack of structured education abroad. Having come from 6 months of formal study in Paris, when the boys arrived in the Ottoman Empire, they were expected to act immediately as translators and interpreters. In Constantinople, the jeunes lived with the Capuchin monks, who heavily monitored their activities and occasionally led lessons in Turkish. The jeunes protested, however, that the priests actively tried to persuade the boys to a life of the cloth, instead of advancing their education and trade. All jeunes d'élan were required to attend the Capuchin religious services and to assist the monks on missionary activities, acting as, quote, good examples of Catholic children to the masses. Placing boys with the Capuchins did not necessarily stem from a desire to spread Catholicism. Since imperial subjecthood increasingly came to imply certain religious bonds, it was certainly an added benefit that these French children could act as Catholic models for emulation, but this was not the main reason for placing them there. With less than 20 monks, the Capuchins of Constantinople had plenty of space to house the boys. Many merchants, some of whom were directly involved with the Marseille Chambre de Commerce, also stayed at the compound during their trips to Constantinople, putting the boys in direct contact with future employers and providing them with an opportunity to practice their translations. Additionally, fearing that teenage boys would be, quote, lured by the temptations and immorality that existed in Constantinople, the austere setting of the monastery on the margins of the city would keep the boys moral. Furthermore, since the Capuchins were educated in Turkish, the French officials assured that they could assist the boys in furthering their education. But boys' reports revealed that the Capuchins did not provide nearly enough secular instruction, leading to many of the boys to contract lessons from Turkish 12 mounts or merchants whom they met in the marketplace. For example, in his report from February 1672, 16-year-old Jean-François Lutin explained that he regularly took lessons from the son of a Turkish translator whom he met in the marketplace in order to perfect his language skills. For these lessons, he performed manual labor for the translator's family. Upon discovering the dissatisfaction of the jeunes and the struggles to perfect their language, in 1678, l'école sent over an Orientalist scholar to conduct daily grammar lessons and create lesson plans for the boys. This scholar, who came from the Sorbonne, was rotated every 2 years. Furthermore, Colbert arranged for the French consul in Constantinople to have its own dragomans lead lessons for the boys twice a week and arrange for private lessons with tutors as needed. While the boys in Constantinople had to interact with Turkish society in order to advance their educations, the boys in Smyrna were rather isolated from Ottoman society. Since these Jeunes were being trained to act as bureaucratic drogma, who would serve the French consuls, vice consuls, and military leaders, they worked at the French embassy and military compound, insulated from Turkish society. According to one report in 1676 from 15-year-old Michel Dutour, the son of a Parisian parlementaire, by working with only Frenchmen, their education abroad was not any more useful than being educated in Paris. Echoing this sentiment in 1677, Denis Chopin complained that, at least in Paris, the scholars are educated and teach us about the language and literature, whereas in Smyrna, the officials are even less intelligent than us in the language, making our progress in education difficult. Furthermore, several boys complain that the drogmas are to act as interpreters but also as cultural envoys, but without knowing about the larger Oriental society, they were doomed to never be able to connect. As the French embassy's charter of 1678 clearly stated, a French drogma was to, quote, translate and interpret, but also to create a connection with foreign dignitaries on literature, art, science, and other endeavors that the boys needed to learn. The boys' complaints were apt, yet the administration did little to fix their circumstances. In 1680, taking matters into their own hands, three young men from Smyrna wrote to Colbert to propose the establishment of an École Française, or French school, that could educate the sons of Ottoman diplomats and merchants in the French language and culture. These Jeunes de Langue proposed to act as teachers to the Ottoman boys. Not only would this increase the likelihood of friendly conversation between Ottomans and the French, but it would also allow the Jeunes to interact and learn from other Turkish young men in a controlled setting. To Colbert, this was an ideal scenario. Cross-cultural exchange would take place, and in his view, Turkish children would be civilized by the French children. In 1681, an informal École Française opened at the French consulate in Smyrna. Sons of Ottoman diplomats and wealthy merchants were invited to learn the basics of the French language. Run entirely by the boys, L'École Française allowed children to act as teachers to other children, practicing their Turkish and their future roles as cultural ambassadors. Both Colbert and the ambassador staked what may seem to us today to be an incredible amount of hope in the school to, quote, persuade elite Turks to act as the French do. The results of the school, however, were much different. Instead of convincing Turkish children to become French, the interactions worked to make the French children more Turkish. The consul in Smyrna complained in 1684 that the Jeunes had taken to adopting practices like drinking coffee in the Turkish fashion at home and talking in Turkish amongst themselves. These practices directly violated one of the Jeunes' regulations to, quote, maintain French customs in private and in the presence of other children. Instead, as the French ambassador in Constantinople wrote in 1689, it was clear that L'École exercised the ability to excellently train children in the marketplace and in administration, but that many of these French children no longer resembled Frenchmen. Even though these boys were serving the French interests abroad wonderfully, teaching about French culture as much as learning about the Orient, it was difficult for the ambassador to immediately identify French children from Ottoman children. The statement referenced a change in the children's uniforms that had recently taken place. Included in the school's regulations was a dress code that requires students to wear a sky blue uniform in French military style. The regulations do not state the exact design of the uniform, but the French embassy in Constantinople wrote that the required uniform consisted of a royal or sky blue jacket with gold buttons and stripes, a cinched royal or sky blue trouser set, and a royal or sky blue vest with gold buttons, with a white ruffled and cuffed shirt, black or brown leather shoes, and a royal or sky blue hat with the necessary military marks on it. However, few children wore this outfit in public, as it created problems for the boys. For example, Jean de Genève, aged about 16, complained to the consul in Constantinople in 1685 that the uniform scared off most of the Ottoman merchants, making negotiations both confusing and futile. According to Jean, the Ottoman merchants were much less willing to conduct business with a boy dressed in a military uniform than one dressed in a less assuming way. Therefore, many boys like Jean created their own outfits that combined both French and Ottoman elements. They took to wearing simple turbans or tunics over their French pants. Adopting local elements of fashion demonstrated how these children were constructing new identities for themselves in the Orient. Although they wanted to retain elements of their French appearance, they did not want to appear as complete foreigners or outsiders. Their new hybrid fashions likely represented changes in their own self-awareness of their identities. The Jeunes were, in short, adapting to a life abroad, creating new friendships and hybrid identities as French drogmans in the Ottoman Empire. Despite the consul's complaints, the children do not appear to have been reprimanded for these actions. In fact, in 1732, when L'École drafted a new set of regulations, the children's ad hoc practice had become standard policy. According to the regulations, children were supposed to dress in French attire of private, but when conducting business in the marketplace, children should use their best judgment to determine what attire is appropriate. Children could choose to wear a completely French uniform, a traditional Oriental outfit, or a combination thereof. The children's reports of actions and successes resulted in direct changes being made to the translation program, demonstrating an ability of the French to adapt to local customs for the sake of increasing trade and alliances. French merchants and the French crown clearly staked considerable hope on the future of these Jeunes d'Along as negotiators and brokers for deals that would expand French monetary and political power in the East. The Jeunes d'Along became more than a handy program for the merchant community, but also became a strategic colonial tool, educating and creating French colonial administrators from a young age. The Jeunes d'Along were far from passive participants and instead were essential in the development of the program, sometimes acting in defiance of.